There was strong emphasis on the sad emotion, the regret, remorse. There must also have been some ecstatic emotion. He just saw the personality of Godhead and had conversation with him, etc., received instructions from him. How'd you like to receive instructions what you're going to do for the rest of your life? Pretty ecstatic. But the emphasis was not on the ecstatic part, it was on the sad part. Can you turn this? There's an on-off switch right there. Okay. So as you see, there's a lot of verses to be covered. 31 verses, but it's pretty straightforward. We'll go very quickly, I believe, and we'll have time for, ample time for questions. So this is like a contrast from this morning. This morning was very controversial and confusing and what's going on. And this is really simple. The section begins, the first verse of this section is Vidura speaking to Maitreya, and Vidura is appreciating Maitreya's position as being beyond duality, beyond attraction for temporary, beyond material existence. He's a topmost devotee. Remember, Maitreya heard directly from Krishna when Krishna was speaking Uddhava Gita. So he's a very special personality, and Vidura is appreciating. Oh, it's Maitreya appreciating Vidura. My dear Vidura, persons like you who are pure devotees of the lotus feet of Mukunda and who are always attached to the honey of his lotus feet, of course this applies to both of them, are always satisfied in serving the lotus feet of the Lord in any condition of life. Such persons remain satisfied, and thus they never ask the Lord for material prosperity. So it's the contrasting position of where Dhruva was, and because that's what they were just discussing. This is Vishwanath summarizing. O Vidura, those like you who taste the dust from the lotus feet of Mukunda do not desire anything for themselves except service to him. Their minds are completely satisfied with whatever object comes to them by chance. This is the Paramahansa stage. Of course, grahasthas can be like that too, whatever comes. It's just a stage of consciousness. In the image, that's Madhavendrapuri, who was a Paramahansa sannyasi, and his practice was he wouldn't eat unless someone brought him something. He wouldn't live very long in the West. But in India, that was how he survived. And it still meant, according to commentary, he was still sometimes fast for days, and that was just fine. Then someone would bring something, and that was just fine. Very elevated stage. So Maitreya is appreciating that Vidura is at that stage. Prabhupada's comment, one should not mistakenly think that nishkama means giving up all desires. That is impossible. A living entity is eternally existent, and he cannot give up desires. The logic of that is, if you give up desires, you give up existence. But we are eternally existent, so you can't give up desires. is concomitant with our existence, eternal existence. A living entity must have desires, that is a symptom of life. When there is a recommendation to become desireless, it is to be understood that this means that we should not desire anything for our sense gratification. Nishkama. And then, for a devotee, the state of mind, nishpraha, unattached, is the right position. So he's equating the two, nishkama and nishpraha. The spriha is found in Bhagavad Gita, translated as aspiration. Asha, desire, hankering, wanting. Kama, nishkam. And Prabhupada refers to Ishopanishad, tena chaktena bunjitaha, that is, whatever is arranged by the Lord for our requirements, we happily accept, and we don't hanker for more than what is provided for our, by our requirements. And that comes as a result of being attached to the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead. This is Vishwanath's words. Attachment to honeycomb of Krishna's lotus feet is the only complete way for detachment from the tar-like sticky matter. Very poetic. So that's the introduction to this new section. Then comes this exchange. When King Uttanapada heard that his son Dhruva was coming back home, as if coming back to life after death, he could not put his faith in this message, for he was doubtful of how it could happen. He considered himself the most wretched, and therefore he thought that if it was not, that it was not possible for him to attain such good fortune. And in blunt language, the king could not believe that a small boy of such tender age could live in the forest. He was certain that Dhruva was dead. But he had faith in the words of Narada. Although he could not believe the words of the messenger, he had full faith in the words of the great sage Narada, because Narada said, your son's going to come back, don't worry, Dad. Thus he was greatly overwhelmed by the news, and he immediately offered the messenger a highly valuable necklace in great satisfaction. Now we hear about these things when kings receive nice messages. You think in your mind of such examples and noble personalities. This was a very common gesture. Someone was giving some feedback on our visit to South India, the Aranyakanda and Kishkindakanda, and so many cultural items. Of course, it's there in the Bhagavatam as well, are indicated. It's just kind of embedded in the narration. And it's educational for at least, you know, for persons like me that was born in America and don't know anything about culture. So it's lessened. So it's a gesture. When someone brings good news, it's just a cultural, when you receive a guest, and so many things. So when you receive good news, some gesture, and it doesn't have to be something valuable, certainly some nice words, but some gift. It's just a culturally appropriate way of life. We also hear the opposite. That is, it's not a good idea to be a bearer of bad news. That's a Chanakya Pandit one. And some nice example, when Vidura goes back to Hastinapur, he doesn't mention what he knows. The whole of the Yadu dynasty has departed and Krishna has departed. He didn't say. They asked, how's everybody, this one, that one? He didn't say. Because Chanaka Pandit says, when you're the bearer of the bad news, the ill feeling about the bad news goes to the person who is bearing the bad news. But sometimes we have to deliver bad news. But it should be done in a refined and cultured way, not, you know, the internet way. Hey, guess what? Blah, blah, blah. And not only that, yada, yada, yada. And then, you know, okay, look, I'll one-up you. Here's a better one than that one. And back and forth it goes. It's just part of the culture of no culture. So back to the cultured. King Uttanapada is a cultured person. He just had a blind spot because of attachment. Like Dhritarashtra was not only materially blind, he was blind in heart because of his attachment. And it's so attachment, undue attachment, you can't see. You see the opposite of what is due to attachment. It's very problematic. Undue attachment is very problematic. But he had heard from Narada, so he had faith in the Narada's word, and now he prepares himself. Then King Uttanapada, being very eager to see the face of his lost son, mounted a chariot. So he leaves the city and goes to greet him before he even comes to the city or to the palace. Drawn by excellent horses and bedecked with gold filigree, taking with him many learned brahmanas, all the elder personalities of his family, his officers, his ministers, his immediate friends, immediately left the city as he proceeded in this parade. There were auspicious sounds of conch shells, kettle drums, flutes, and the chanting of Vedic mantras to indicate all good fortune. So here's a nice painting of the scene. This is after he greets him with his chariot. And I'll point out to you, once again, there's a contradiction. Get used to it. It happens sometimes. As the painting shows, the two queens were in the palanquin. And later in this same chapter, it says what the painting shows. But shortly, Prabhupada is going to say in his purport something else. Both the queens of the king Uttanapada, namely Suniti and Saruchi, along with her other son Uttanapada, appeared in the procession. The queens were seated on a palanquin. And then the purport says, Suniti, out of her great compassion and due to being the mother of a great Vaishnava, did not hesitate to take the other wife, Suruchi, and her son, Uttama, on the same palanquin. Don't let your mind get toasted, please. So now, this is a scripture quiz question. Raise your hand, don't just blurt it out. What's the one quality of a Vaishnava upon which all other desirable qualities rest or are supported? I see one hand, I see two hands, I see Srimati.
Humility.
What?
Humility.
Humility. Okay, any other suggestions? Yes.
Compassion.
Compassion. Compassion. Forgiving.
Krishna Ekasharana.
Krishna Ekasharana. Where does that come from? That's Rupa Goswami listing qualities of a devotee and saying that one of the qualities of a devotee is Swarup Lakshana and the others are Tatastha Lakshana, principal quality. Krishna Ekasharna, so you know what that means. Shelter in Krishna alone. Anyone else? Yes. Always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna. That becomes possible when you take full shelter of him, right? It's just another way of saying the same. Anyone else? There's a nice passage from chapter 13, texts 8 through 12. I see Parmarupa's hand. Mayi chananya yogena bhaktir avyabacharini. I'll say it again. Mayi chananya yogena bhaktir avyabacharini. Avyabachari bhakti. Undivided devotion. That's the quality upon which all other qualities rest. And then immediately after that says, how does that become accessed? How has that become accessed? That's Rupa Goswami's term. In Bhagavad Gita, Acharya Upasana. Acharya Upasana, worship of the spiritual master. In the language of Rupa Goswami, Guru Padashraya. That's how you access Mayi Chananya Yogena Bhaktir Avyabhicharini. So that's the one quality. So now, raise your hand, please. Don't just say. Some of Suniti's good qualities resting upon this one good quality.
Faith in Krishna.
Faith in Krishna. Boy, did she have faith in Krishna. We're going to hear some more about that this morning. Good qualities. What's that?
Humility.
Yes. Forgiveness. Empathy. Fantastic. I couldn't hear you.
Austerity.
Wow, that's a mother's appreciation. Good for you. Yes. 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 Yes.
Optimism.
Optimism. Yes. Faith, yes, that was the first one. It's good to the second one and third one and fourth one. Yes.
Merciful.
Accepting. Which is part of the responding instead of reacting. So, but it's all resting upon one thing. Krishna Ekasharana. And then she did her duties. She lived her life. And she went back to Godhead. Upon seeing Dhruva Maharaj approaching the neighboring small forest, so he's outside the palace, out in the forest, some path out there, King Uttanapada, with great haste, got down from his chariot. He had been very anxious for a long time to see his son Dhruva. And therefore, with great love and affection, he went forward to embrace his long-lost boy, breathing very heavily. King embraced him with both arms. But Dhruva was not the same as before. He was completely sanctified by spiritual advancement due to having been touched by the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Touched by his conch shell too, but there's Suniti and the king and Dhruva. Reunion with Dhruva Maharaj filled King Uttanapada's long-cherished desire, and for this reason he smelled Dhruva's head again and again and bathed him with torrents of very cold tears. The explanation is given that hot tears when you're angry and cold tears when you're in ecstasy. So you can tell if somebody's in ecstasy or not just by the temperature of their tears. Let me see. Okay. Then, Dhruva Maharaj, the foremost of nobles, first of all offered his obeisances at the feet of his father and was honored by his father with various questions. Then he bowed his head at the feet of his two mothers. Remember what his feelings were before towards one of those two. But he was past resentment. It's gone. Gone. Completely gone? Possible? Some of you may have some resentment towards somebody for something. Even in the course of my being here, I've heard some interesting stories about resentment towards somebody for something. If you'd like to get rid of that resentment, follow Dhruva. I mean, you don't have to go to the forest and do what he did for 6 months, but follow him in principle. Prabhupada's purport. After achieving perfection by self-realization and seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face, Dhruva Maharaj was completely freed from all contamination of material desire, feelings of insults or honor. Remember Narada said, my goodness, he's just a little boy and harsh words and his sense of honor has been insulted so severely. Little boy. He went to speak of big boys and girls. Bhakti can dissolve all of that. In the purport, Prabhupada writes, duality due to animosity, duality due to animosity, right? Dvandva mohena bharata, raga dvesha samutena, dvandva mohena bharata. So that animosity towards another, guess what? Behind that other is Krishna. You want to get rid of animosity towards another? Hey, check out your animosity towards Krishna. Like, you know, that which brings you to the material world to begin with. Check that one out. And you take care of that one. That's the root. It'll take care of the other one. This is the creation of the material world. There is no such thing in the spiritual world, which is the absolute reality. So there's little you have to watch. Over on the love side, love towards some people, hate towards other people, in friends and enemies, another way of saying the same thing. And our scriptures advise us, don't go there. The friends-enemy program. Dhruva held no feelings of animosity towards anyone. Purport says, feelings of insult or honor in this material world are due to material desire. Again, some person shared with me, you know, the hurt they felt or the insult and the wrong dealing and the mistreatment and, you know, the things that are part of this world. It's not that, look at the image. What Suruchi did was hurtful. her words, her body language, her whole thing was hurtful. But it's the material desire, the feelings of feeling insulted. That's another thing. Feelings of insult or honor in this material world are due to material desire. The behavior, let's say it again, the behavior was insulting. The behavior was hurtful. Nasty. So nasty. Very nasty. So the behavior's not okay, but what about your feelings? Well, it's due to a material desire, our material desire. Now, we can't change somebody else's material desire. We can deal with ours. And where does that material desire arise from? Forgetfulness of who we really are. Solution. Remember who you really are. I've told the story maybe 20 times. I'll tell it for 21st time. One of the places that I visited not so long ago in China was Chengdu. This is the Chengdu story. So I never heard of the place. It's easy to pronounce Chengdu, but I never knew where it was. But there's somebody that I know that had completed Bhakti Shastri, and they were a yoga instructor, part of a yoga school, and they wanted me to come to Chengdu. And so I agreed, you know, adventure some sannyasi, I'll go visit Chengdu, sure. So the main person that who was hosting gatherings was the yoga studio owner. And there were three programs at her yoga studio, all for her staff, not for the clients. There were like 55 staff people in this place. And they all had uniforms, the instructors, the hospitality people, and the back office people. So she selected the topics from the long list, and there was, you know, I asked her some questions about why she selected certain ones. She is very clear about, I'll say one of them. One of them was the art of meditation overcoming anxiety. So right at the beginning of the class, I asked her, out of that list, why did you select that one? She smiled. She stood up. And she said, looked around the room. She said, I know my staff very well, and they're in a lot of anxiety. And I believe they're in anxiety because they don't know what happiness is. And they have an expectation of happiness that doesn't match what happiness is, and so they're in a lot of anxiety. So I would wanted you to speak about that, you know, what's real happiness? To overcome unnecessary anxiety when you have an artificial sense of what happiness is and it doesn't happen. You think there's something wrong with you or something like that. So, well, you know, this lady's clear. She knows her staff. It turns out she doesn't know what happiness is either. I found that out later. So later, after those three classes, she wanted some discussion time. There's a translator, her yoga instructor that has completed Bhakti Shastri, the lady in her, you know, early 40s, mid-40s, something like that, mature. So what would you like to discuss? You know, so she launched right away. Very clear. Since the time I was a little girl, I had this intuitive sense, there's a mission in my life, and I want to know what that is and connect with it. And she didn't pause, she just kept going. So a lot of people advised me, do well in school. So I took that on board, I did really well in school. And after some time, I realized that's not my mission in life, doing well in school. So I started asking, what's my mission in life? And some people said, well, it's not just doing well in school. You got to make a lot of money. So I took that on board and I made a lot of money and doing a lot of different things. And then I realized It's not my mission in life is making a lot of money. And then some people said, well, of course, it's not just making money. You have to be a leader and help people, other people make money. So I took that on board and I became a leader in so many different things. And then I realized, that's not my mission in life, become a leader to help people make money. And so then somebody said, well, of course not. You have to be compassionate and do other things for other people. So I've been, that's been my project of late. But, you know, there's something missing. Now, I can't remember her words, but her basic thing was, what's next? Where do I go from here? Like a little kid. You know, very successful at all the things she tried to do. It's like that little kid lifting the bell bar. She was a very determined lady. But something's missing. So I don't know her, so I was being careful. So I just said, you know, appreciation, this, that, and the other thing. But it's not, you know, the ultimate thing, but you really need to know who you are. And this whole description is, you still don't know who you are. So this person over here, she knows Bhagavad Gita. Study Bhagavad Gita with her. And you'll come to know who you are. And then there's other things after that, but do that first. And then I reminded her, you know, 8 months ago, there was some communication and she wanted some instruction. I asked some questions and the instruction was to tell your yoga teacher, no, excuse me, the yoga studio owner to become a full-on vegetarian because she was Buddhist, but wasn't vegetarian. And she said, I'm almost there. You know, I've cut down a lot, but there's still some compromise. I said, okay. Make it squeaky clean. You're Buddhist. Become a full vegetarian. And then you know what? There's something after that. You offer your vegetarian food to Krishna. And then she said, well, I've been a Buddhist. Should I offer everything to Buddha? I've never been asked that question before. I can't even remember what my answer was. But she's now offering her food to Krishna. You know, little by little. But, you know, but I've sent it a couple reminders. How's it going? With your study of Bhagavad Gita. I didn't say, you know, do you know who you are yet? But that's really what the question is. How's your study of Bhagavad Gita? She said, I've been really busy with business. Okay. I look forward to visiting you in the future. She knows what's coming. So we want to help people go in a way that's appropriate for each person that we interact with to go the next step and specifically even to know who they are. Because that's not small. That's essential. And if we maintain a material, so back to this text, if we maintain a material conception of self, we forgot who we really are. And when we forget who we really are, we get caught in this duality thing, friend and enemy, honor, dishonor, the duality program. And it's bumpy. It's really unpleasant. You know, the pleasant look pleasant, but then shortly after, because this duality is going to be the other. It's supposed to snow tomorrow morning. Now, I did some checking because somebody said, uh-oh, maybe we should cancel tomorrow because it's going to snow tomorrow. But it's like light snow and then it gets warm and it gets to be rain. So what are you going to do? It's going to snow and then it's going to rain. You know, if the forecasting people got it right. So that's duality, sometimes and sometimes. That's the acceptance. Now, what are we going to do? Well, we're going to go on with our program and in the rain. Carry an umbrella if it's raining when you walk from your car to the temple. You don't have to. You can. But you make some arrangement, whatever you're going to do, because you know what's out ahead of you. So what's out ahead of us is more duality. It's not like when you become a devotee, duality stops. No one will ever say anything harsh to you ever again because you're a Hare Krishna devotee. That's not what's going to happen. Or no one will be kind to you for no good reason, just because they're being kind to you for no good reason, apparently. And it's just part of the world. Honor, dishonor, pleasure, pain, happiness and distress, cold and hot and light and dark and this and that. It's just the place. Don't get into the friend, and it's just repeating because it's repeated so many times. Friend-enemy program, don't do it. If you don't see friend-enemy, what do you see? You see spirit-soul. There's a spirit-soul just like me, part and parcel of the Supreme Spirit who I'm trying to get close to. So let me accept them as spirit-soul. You don't have to like the behavior. Look at the picture. The behavior is not nice. We don't have to like that behavior. But he has overlooked the behavior and is seeing the spirit soul. And now we're going to hear something more. Her heart has changed also towards him. So here's his mother saying to Dhruva, "My dear boy, may you live long." Unto one who has transcendental qualities due to friendly behavior with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, all living entities offer honor just as water automatically flows down by nature. This is two verses summarized, so here's some waterfalls. And the next verse, just as water naturally flows to a lower level, this is Vishwanath summarizing. All beings naturally offer respect to that person with whom the Lord is pleased because of his qualities. Remember, Krishna Ekasharana? From that one quality, all other good qualities come. And because of all those good qualities, one of them is friendliness, and one feels that friendliness, tacit or spoken, through action or just by character. It's just like when Hanuman came before Ram and Lakshman. He didn't even say anything. He just felt. So he completely gave up his disguise as being a Brahmana. And as in a Brahmana disguise, he fell at their feet. Their Kshatriyas carrying bow and arrows and swords. The Brahmana is offering obeisances to a Kshatriya. He abandoned the culture because he understood who they were just by seeing them. They didn't even say anything yet. When you before an exalt, you've probably heard from Prabhupada memories, just seeing Prabhupada. How many times, you know, so many of those, he just looked at me and I felt he was seeing right through me and he knew all my dirty stuff and he smiled and it made my life for 30 years. Powerful. So Dhruva was powerful. It wasn't the same. It wasn't the same. Just like when Vidura came back after his pilgrimage. It wasn't the same. It was Vidura, but it wasn't the same Vidura. And that same Vidura that wasn't the same Vidura was able to persuade his elder brother to change his ways. Although he tried and tried and tried and tried. And he gave up trying. He left for purification. And he came back purified. And now it was a whole other story. We hear the same being spoken of about the six Goswamis. Dira, dira, jana, priya, priya, karo, Nirmatsara Pujita. The Goswamis were equally dear to the Dira and the Adira. This is Prabhupada saying demons. They're those who are not devotees. Suruchi, the stepmother, was previously inimical. Now Dhruva was respected by her because of his worship of the Lord. In Rupa Goswami's Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he comments on this particular verse and says, Rupa Goswami has expanded this all-fascinating and all-auspicious characteristic of a true devotee such as Dhruva, but he extends it to all attractiveness of bhakti itself. If some honor comes to a devotee that's got their light on, does understand it's not me, it's the mercy that has come to me. It's my spiritual master and the bhakti process. If there's anything worthy in me, it's Bhakti Vinod Thakur's writing. You'll look in me and you'll find any good fault. And if you find good fault, my spiritual master put it there. That's how a devotee thinks. Rightly so. And that means the bhakti process. And the devotee who's deliverer of the bhakti process. Next. The two brothers, Uttama and Dhruva Maharaj, also exchanged their tears. They were overwhelmed by the ecstasy of love and affection. And when they embraced one another, the hair on their bodies stood up. Suniti, the real mother of Dhruva Maharaj, embraced the tender body of her son, who was dearer to her than her own life, and thus forgot all material grief, for she was very pleased. Purport. It is also significant in this verse that Suniti, mother of Dhruva Maharaj, is described as Veera Su, a mother who produced a great hero. A devotee also is a great hero because he conquers the influence of Maya. Just a little sharing. In the Chicago temple, they have every month they take a different personality and ask the speaker at the Sunday program to speak about that personality in terms of their becoming a hero. Become a hero. That's the slogan for the Sunday program for a month, for a whole year. And then this person, that person, the other person. And no one gets tired of it. And how do you become a hero? Take shelter of Krishna. Mami vaye prapadyante. So now, almost to the conclusion of this session, the citizens are going to receive Dhruva. And it starts with Suniti. They glorify Suniti as she welcomes Dhruva by saying, "The residents of the palace praise the queen. Dear queen, your beloved son was lost a long time ago. And it is your good fortune that he has now come back. It appears, therefore, that your son will be able to protect you for a very long time and will put an end to all your material pangs. Dear queen, you must have worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead who delivers his devotees from the greatest danger. Persons who constantly meditate upon him surpass the course of birth and death. This perfection is very difficult to achieve." Now, this is in the palace, so there are bhakta personalities in the palace. So Dhruva grew up in the palace, so he had heard bhakti messages before he heard from his mother. Prabhupada's purport. Dhruva Maharaj was the lost child of Queen Suniti, but during his absence, she always meditated upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is able to rescue his devotee from all dangers. So she was meditating upon, we can be sure she was also praying. In Prabhupada's comment, this principle of a surrendered soul is faith that Krishna is one's protector. And the one's protector includes the protector of those who are dear to you. If Krishna is your protector and you have affection for one who is dear to you, the protection goes to the one who is dear to you. Even they don't do anything. So now we're continuing in this procession back to the palace. My dear Vidura, when everyone was thus praising Dhruva Maharaj, the king was very happy. And he had Dhruva and his brother seated on the back of the she-elephant, which is different than he was in the palanquin. But that's okay. He got back to the palace somehow. Thus he returned to his capital, where he was praised by all classes of men. Now here's the reception. The whole city was decorated with columns of banana trees containing bunches of fruits and flowers. I hope some bananas too. And betel nut trees with leaves and branches were seen here and there. There were also many gates set up, which were structured to give the appearance of sharks. At each and every gate were burning lamps and big water pots decorated with differently colored cloth, strings of pearls, flower garlands, and hanging mango leaves. In the capital city, there were many palaces, city gates, and surrounding walls, which were already very, very beautiful. And on this occasion, all of them were decorated with golden ornaments, the walls. The domes of the city palaces glittered, as did the domes of the beautiful airplanes, which hovered over the city. Thus, as Dhruva Maharaj passed on the road, from every place in the neighborhood, all the gentle household ladies assembled to see him. And out of maternal affection, they offered their blessings, showering him with white mustard seed, barley, yogurt, newly grown grass, fruits, and flowers. You better have taken a bath after all of that. In this way, Dhruva Maharaj, while hearing the pleasing song sung by the ladies, entered the palace of his father. Dhruva Maharaj thereafter lived in his father's palace, which had walls bedecked with highly valuable jewels. His affectionate father took particular care of him, and he dwelled in that house just as the demigods live in their palaces in the higher planetary systems. And we're almost done with the chapter. Dhruva Maharaj then lived in a royal palace which was full of heavenly pleasures. Here's some of them described. You can read all very well, I'm sure. Dhruva was saintly. If the head of the government is saintly, certainly the citizens become saintly, and they are very happy because both their spiritual and physical needs and hankerings are satisfied. That's Prabhupada's purport. So this is just, you know, the opulence of the royal palace in which he was residing. So finally, Dhruva becomes the king. he grew up a little bit first. The saintly king Uttanapada, hearing of the glorious deeds of Dhruva Maharaj and personally seeing also how influential and great he was, felt very satisfied, for Dhruva's activities were wonderful to the supreme degree. When, after concentration, King Uttanapada saw that Dhruva Maharaj was suitably mature to take charge of the kingdom and that his ministers were agreeable and the citizens were also very fond of him, they didn't have a public election, he enthroned Dhruva as emperor of this planet. So just one more verse and the chapter's over. After considering his advanced age and deliberating on the welfare of his spiritual self, King Uttanapada detached himself from worldly affairs and entered the forest. He was following in the footsteps of his son. He's smart. He kind of messed up, but he's got smart. Compliments of Dhruva. So now we're going to do this compare-contrast, and this is our final message. Before leaving home or upon leaving home, he felt anger upon being insulted. He felt resentment while contemplating that insult. That resentment turned to revenge. He wanted to prove himself and one up everybody. And then something happened. Narada came along. Vishnu came along with a big assist from his mother. And he went to another place. Now he's coming back home. Resentment gone. Respect towards those who he felt resentment towards gone. Detachment fully awakened. He has all this opulence and he wasn't distracted at all. And he now accepted the responsibility that was asked of him by Lord Vishnu. It's a long time ruling a kingdom for 36,000 years. Sure, it wasn't easy. So, last image. How about y'all? You ready to let go of your resentments? Well, that's okay for Dhruva, but you know, I like my favorite resentments are very important to me. What will I do without my resentments? Okay, so that finishes the chapter. And now we're ready for chapter 10. That's this evening. We'll just cover just a few verses because it's really packed. And then lots of other nice instructions. So we have 11, 12, and 13. 8, 9, 10. 8 and 9. So, excuse me. This is the whole of chapter 10 and the beginning of chapter 11. So, five more classes. And light snow tomorrow morning. And then rain. So we're going to continue. Bring your umbrella if you need to. So, lights. Let's see if there's some topics you'd like. We didn't have time for that, you know, very interesting morning session. Yeah. I saw one hand up over here first. But we, okay, you have to wait because the microphone didn't come yet. Go ahead.
I've been thinking about this phrase you used, victim becomes a perpetrator. And my understanding of it is if I have been through situations where I was put down by people, then I have a tendency to put people down when I find situations like that. Is that a correct understanding?
The victim becomes the perpetrator.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the standard MO in the material world. And so the devotee is advised, don't become the perpetrator after having been a victim. You can make other choices, but that's not a good choice. You don't have to do that. You have options. Is that okay? Did that answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you, Swamiji. I have a question that in this case, Dhruv came back successful. He went for an aim to see Godhead. He achieved it and he was welcomed happily. What if in case he had not got successful? In the real world, sometimes people don't get successful.
That's
would he have
a
been
nice
treated?
Question. Take the microphone from her. You keep going with full faith. I'll give an example. Our founder, Acharya Srila Prabhupada, came to America with Mission Impossible. And there was no success, 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 and there was no success. And he felt himself successful because he was carrying out the instruction of his spiritual master. And when Krishna saw, he's just committed to the instruction of his spiritual master, it started becoming successful. But supposing it hadn't become successful, he was considering himself successful. Not results, but bhakti. Carrying out the order of the spiritual master is one success. Is that all right? Okay. Go ahead. You got the microphone right in front of you.
So, supposing in this world or so, mostly when people are not successful or so, people look down on them.
No, when you say not successful, let me ask you, what's your standard, not their standard, what's your standard of not successful?
It's not my standard, but what happened is when people see you've not achieved...
Let people that are covered by illusion do their blah, blah thing. Out there is the whole spectrum of stuff. Our business is not to satisfy the spectrum of stuff. That's not possible. That's not our business either. Your business is your relationship with Guru and Krishna. And you just stay there. And they can say blah, blah.
Thank you.
Because some people are going to say, oh, you're wonderful. And some people are going to say, oh, you're wasting your time. And some people are going to be on the fence. Say, I'm not sure. And, you know, it's just, that's what's out there. And we just accept that's what's out there. Now, that's not my business is satisfying all the spectrum of people. That's not possible. It's not my assignment either. Okay.
Hare yes. Krishna Guru Maharaj. So I hope I can put the question in the right perspective.
I hope so too.
Yeah. So there's only one question but a different perspectives to it. So Dhruv Maharaj started with a different goal, basically to get a, you know, kingdom beyond great grandfather. And when he was touched by the conch shell of Lord Vishnu, he was a perfected soul by then. But then he did not get the love of Godhead as the gopis got. Was there a reason why he could not get and he got Dhruvaloka instead? And the reason why I'm asking this question is, we are, as we start in Krishna consciousness, we start with different goals. And my only concern is, okay, because we have asked for something in the beginning, is it that we will not get the love of Godhead as gopis got when we are in the perfected stage?
Do you really have that as an anxiety or is it notional?
Anxiety.
Huh?
Anxiety.
What's the word?
Anxiety.
Anxiety.
Yes.
But is the anxiety notional or from the core of your heart? I'm asking maybe a rhetorical question, but I'll say it differently. Generally speaking, this is me speaking. Generally speaking, devotees join the Hare Krishna movement from the mind.
Yes.
And that's a question from the mind. That's that type of question, not you. But that type of question commonly is from the mind. And what's more important is to move to the heart and just get beyond the mind, check the box, this is should be my aspiration, okay, next. But, you know, something that's deeper. No. One who, keeping it really simple, one who is a follower, just be a strict follower of Rupa Goswami and you'll get there. Because Lord Chaitanya came to give Braja Prem. And Rupa Goswami is the representative of Lord Chaitanya giving Braja Prem. So just follow Rupa Goswami. And you'll get Braja Prem. It's an unnecessary anxiety that's arising in the mind because of the mind's acceptance of a notion that it really isn't in the heart yet. That's my assessment. So just follow Rupa Goswami. And the results are up to Krishna. He'll take you wherever he wants to take you. But Lord Chaitanya wants to take you to Braja Prem. But we'll go wherever he wants us to go. If we're there, you know, if that's what our position of heart is, it's like Gopal Kumar. He's, you know, went to all other kinds of places. It just wasn't the same. Because the Adhikar was, in his case, he was born in Braja. But his guru was the personality of Godhead. The external manifestation of the personality of Godhead. And that love, the Madan Gopal mantra, was Krishna in Vrindavan. And he got there. Because it was in his heart of hearts and he had lots of opportunity for anything else and distractions and this and that. He kept going. So, keep going. Follow Rupa Goswami. And the line of Acharyas coming from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And that's where you go. No worries, as they say in Australia.
So if I can add one more, Mother Maharaj.
Is it the same topic with different words?
Same topic, but a different perspective.
Okay.
So, more like the concern was from, with the impure heart,
but
what are the
matter.
Choices we are
doesn't
making?
Doesn't matter.
Are we making the right choices?
Doesn't matter. You just connect, and whatever your impure desires are, connect. I mean, it doesn't mean just take it easy, Hari Bol, but, you know, the main attention goes to the connect. The submission in love and devotion to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his disciplic succession. Connect. There's our founder, Acharya. Just read his books and you'll get there. Whatever your contaminations might be and impure stuff, the power is there. Stick your fingers in an electric outlet. What happens? Supposing you're not a good conductor. It's principle. And follow it. Masur Chaha. Do you believe that Krishna can do it?
Yes.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Then you have no worries. Well, what about my bad stuff? No worries. Masur Chaha.
Sure. Thank you, Maharaj.
Okay. In the back. Okay. You have the microphone. Go ahead. But Devaki Nandan next.
Guru Maharaj, I have three questions. First is from the previous slides that you presented. But just before you were showing the pole star, and then that explanation of the Vedic planetarium. In that, there was a line, I think, taken from the 19th verse purport, I believe, where I saw it written, which was, I was having a hard time understanding. It was stating to the effect that the Supreme Personality of Godhead does not reward material opulence, does not reward a pure devotee material opulence, even though he may desire it. So I just didn't understand, because pure devotee, why would he even care to ask for material opulence?
Checkmate. A pure devotee doesn't have a desire for material opulence, does he? That's your question.
So how can
a pure devotee have a desire for material opulence? It's a contradiction. That's your point.
I didn't understand that statement.
I don't
either. Right.
Next question.
Okay.
I'd have to go look at the commentary and see the context to answer your question properly.
Okay. Second question is...
Let's do this. Let's go back, you know, a couple of days or a couple of sessions, and this description that Jiva Goswami gives, that only to those who are very intelligent will the Lord give opulence like kingdom and wealth, because they won't become fallen having kingdom and wealth. Now, in Dhruva's case, it was mixed devotion. He had material desire. And look around or look inside. Is there any material desire inside? Or, you know, those near and dear to you, your family members and those who you associate with in your devotional service. Any material desires inside? So they're not at pure devotion. Then comes this question, what's pure devotion? Let's look at Rupa Goswami's definition of pure devotion. And it includes sadhana bhakti. If the aspiration is to come to Shuddha bhakti, that's pure devotion. That's bhakti uttama, even in the sadhana stage. And Krishna does an award to such a devotee, one who's on the path of pure devotion, who's also in one sense a pure devotee, because they're cultivating.
Okay. Then the second question is that Devi Maya Upashrita that you showed, which was in the context of one who is taking shelter of the material energy, but it's very similar to Devim Prakritim Ashrita, which the Mahatmas generally do, which is the definition of a devotee. So Devi Maya is somehow in that case representing the material energy of Krishna as opposed to the internal energy. I'm just clarifying because,
It sounds right. I don't recall the context, but what you're saying sounds right. Is that okay?
Okay. So
you're just seeking verification. Have I understood properly? Sounds like it. I don't recall the context.
Okay. The third question is, in the case of Suruchi, who was destined to get that devoured with the forest fire, very really ill-fated situation, and you explained how, because of having committed offense to...
Prabhupada explained.
So now, in the end, she was regretting and she was really... it seemed like the relationship restored.
She was regretting and she was excused.
But then the fate did not change.
Yeah, well, you know, a devotee may forgive, but Krishna may not. It's up to Krishna. Between her and Dhruva, he is fine. Between her and Krishna, maybe not fine. You have to ask Krishna. Was he fine?
Okay.
Doesn't look like it.
Okay. Thank you.
Can we go in the back? Devaki, Nandan, all the way.
Hare Krishna, just small comment. You were asking about Suniti's qualities.
Uh-huh.
What struck me the most, her kindness, especially when I hears that she was the one who made Suruchi come on the second palanquin, or the same palanquin, doesn't matter, but I find that so important, kindness, especially to those who are down. Suruchi was down because she was guilty of making an offense, and Suniti picked her up and said, let's go, you're not staying back. So that quality, because I hear in this discussion for all these days, the heart is so important for bhakti. You just also mentioned. So I'm feeling Suniti had that golden heart that changed Dhruva Maharaj, that changed Uttanapada also, everybody around her. So my appreciation for Suniti is growing more and more and more.
Yeah, so she's like, special.
Thank you.
Well, for me, even, you know, before putting her on the palanquin after all of what she did, even in the heat of the moment, this is like months later, in the heat of the moment, she didn't say an unkind word or any indication of an unkind thought. I mean, kindness to her husband, to Suruchi. She was crying. She was like a burnt leaf, etc. She was feeling emotions, but it wasn't like ill anything towards others. Gosh, that's not human. That's otherworldly. That's real love. It's not normal. She's not a conditioned soul, even way back then. So Madhupati in the back.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. I was just meditating on the fact that after Dhruva Maharaj got this good fortune from the Supreme Lord, and the message went back to the kingdom that he's coming back, What made the king, Uttanapad, give him such a grand welcome, is that out of atonement of what he had done, or Romans, because it was like almost like grand welcome, as if he knew the Romans now. He probably heard the message that Dhruva Maharaj got enlightened.
He heard that before it even happened from Narada. He heard.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Narada went to visit him. I don't know if you were here for that. Okay. Narada went to visit him right after this conversation with Dhruva. We went off to Madhavan. Okay. He, you know, intuitively went back to the Uttanapada's palace and said, "Hey, King, how's it going? You don't look so good."
Okay.
"Oh, I'm a bad person." And he said, "Don't worry. He's going to become a perfected soul. He'll be back shortly. Okay. He'll be a changed person. He's going to achieve. He's already glorious. He just got started. When he comes back, you know, everything can be nice." So, he knew it ahead of time. The Tri Kala Gyan Narada told him it's going to happen. And he had faith in Narada. Does that answer your question?
Yes, yes, Maharaj. I missed that part. Okay.
Okay.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. Just adding to that, Maharaj, Narad Muni even says that even Uttanapada will be getting a good name because of his son. At that time, I was thinking, in which way, as a father of Dhruva Maharaj, he will get a good name, or a changed person, or any consciousness difference?
I don't recall reading he was feeling happy because now he's going to get a good name. Maybe he was feeling that, but I don't recall reading that. He was, that others were glorifying Dhruva, the way that they were glorifying Dhruva, that made him happy. That, you know, first was, he's alive. And then greeting him, and then after greeting him, embracing him, and who knows what that experience was? Not just because it was his long-lost son, but he is a perfected soul. And embracing a perfected soul in that affection of father to son. So he must have been transformed just by that, just by the touch of a pure devotee. So, I don't know if he was feeling name and fame is now coming to me because my son is great. I don't know if that was what's going on with him.
My question was, Maharaj, how did Narada say that you are going to get good name? Was it because of Dhruva being his son, or in that way I was asking?
Well, yes. And from that, you know, concentric circles expand out.
Mm.
Just like us, being connected to our founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada, good fortune comes to us just because of that. Now, that means then we have a responsibility to live up to that expectation, and some do and some don't and some in between. But, you know, that honor just because of that connection to whatever degree, and then in different degrees. Okay, up front.
Thank you very much, Maharaj. My question is like, when Lord Vishnu is informing that about the future of Surichi, like his stepmother and his brother, so at that time Dhruva Maharaj is already a transformed person.
He's already a what?
A transformed person at his heart.
Transformed, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, he has a choice to request Lord Vishnu to forgive them, but why he choose to be silent and...
Hey, it's the Lord's plan. Hey, can you change your plan, Supreme Lord, please? I don't like your plan. That's not good etiquette. Way in the back.
One more question, bro.
Okay.
You were mentioning that Svetadvip is in the milk ocean.
Is in the milk ocean.
Milk ocean. And at that same time, there are some explanations are there. Swatadvipa is synonymous to Dhruvloka. So the milk ocean is, because I read like the milk ocean is in the Bhumandala platform, but so is there another milk ocean where Lord Vishnu resides?
Yes. Those are two milk oceans, not the same. Like the churning of the milk ocean, that's not the Swatadvipa milk ocean. It's the one in Bhumandala. Okay. Clear?
Sure, Maharaj. Thank you, Maharaj.
Okay. Back here? All the way in the back? All the way in the back? All the way in the back.
Maharaj, this is a question on forgiveness and justice. So it also relates to this topic of victim and perpetrator.
Yeah.
So in the context of Krishna consciousness, who holds the responsibility for what? So is the devotee, the practicing devotee, should always be disposed toward forgiveness versus, hey, I need justice because I've been hurt. And then the leaders or the caretakers, do they hold the responsibility for justice as an instrument of the Lord? You know, so what should be the disposition of the devotee? Because sometimes we may not be ready to forgive, and we are looking for justice, and justice may not come, at least in the way that we want.
Well, that's that last phrase at the end is a very operative phrase. No, justice is a very complicated or subtle, let's say, topic. It's not so clear and straightforward, ABC, and over there is XYZ. It's not so clear. So this is not something from scripture, it's just something that I've understood. It becomes a super soul directed kind of, where's the line? And as your question is, whose responsibility is it? So, if somebody finds himself, you or anybody else, finds himself, as you described, not so inclined for forgiveness and seeking instead justice, then, you know, tune into Super Soul Channel. And what does Krishna want? And then the person in whose hand is the sword of chastisement, or the rod of chastisement, better. Where does justice lie? They have to turn into super soul. Because it's easy to whack. But is that what, you know, what is appropriate justice-wise? It's not easy. The super soul question is not easy. It's not, and it's not always this or always that. It's subtle and not so clear. So it would be great in such a circumstance if Srila Prabhupada or some Uttama Adhikari personality was present, and everyone, this one and that one, accepts the Uttama Adhikari, and the Uttama Adhikari says whatever they say. And everyone just says Haribo, because the Uttama Adhikari said it. In the absence of such a person, there's going to be differences of view on that question you just asked. Not just, you know, the one who's on the receiving end of injustice and the one who's the giver of that unjust act. There's all kinds of other people on the sidelines. I mean, a nice example is Shakti Gopal and the people in the village. you know, in Amala Bhakta's narration, he has this soundtrack in the background. And everyone's going, what's going on? What's going on? Hey, what's going on? You know, the internet. What's going on? Or in the community. What's going on? And some that just say, what's going on? They say, you know, he's at fault or he's at fault. And someone leans this way, they, you know, it's like politics. It's like, you know, this thing that's going on in the government now. Some people say and some people say. Who's to say? You know, somebody that's connected to Supersoul is to say. And who's that? So where's justice? And where's forgiveness? It's not easy. What Haridas Thakur said to the king, to the qazi, was, you're the representative of the king is the representative of God, you have the right and the authority to do with me whatever you like. You're God's representative. Now, he was far from God's representative, but his position, the post, is God's representative, so do with me what you like. I accept. That's, you know, that's, is that justice? Well, that was what, so, it's going to be different for different people. Unless there is an actual qualified Uttama Adhikari person. You know, you could say the neutral judge, and then somebody else gives the punishment. That's the modern system, the democratic system, the judicial department, and the rod of chastisement department, executive department. Looks like the kids are ready. We'll take one more question because she's very enthusiastic. Two more questions. Well, very enthusiastic. And then we're done.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Go ahead, I'm listening.
Okay. Maharaj, just correct me if I'm going wrong in the question. As I heard the initial part of Dhruva Maharaj, resentment and that turning into kind of revenge, isn't there a subtle form of envy somewhere involved
yes.
in that?
Oh yeah.
But then, you know, when Krishna and envy is two things which never go together, then how this, you know, Krishna appearing before him, he getting pure devotion is
little... He got freed from it. That's how. Is it possible to have contamination cleared?
Yes.
Okay.
But like the motivation was...
That's so... Is it possible for impurity to become cleared?
Okay.
Thank you. Last question. And then comes the drama. Go ahead.
My question is, you know, the king, they didn't mention anything. He did quite a lot of things, like he was unfair to his kid, to his queen. Did he get punished like his other queen?
I don't know. There's no mention one way or the other.
Because
he suffered a lot. He suffered a lot, but was there further consequence? There's no mention.
I was wondering, are mean people happy? People that do nasty things? People that do nasty things, are they happy?
Oh, no, of course not. Who can be happy doing nasty things?
Okay. Thank you very much.
They're suffering. That's why they do the nasty things.
Okay.
It's part of their nasty suffering.
Okay,
so
thanks.
Who's in charge of the drama?